The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good day. Thanks for being with us. Hope you had a great weekend. I saw the 60-minute interview last night with Howard Schultz, and that was one of the highlights of my weekend. Starbucks guy, formerly, wants to run for president. I thought it was really interesting to hear him for 20 minutes. So that was cool. Eric was in Texas this weekend, and he did his thing, and he came back, lived to tell about it. We have Christian Kirk in studio today on this Monday. We have Waste Management Open Week. We have a lot to get to on today's show. Some of it is repetitive. I feel like Bill Murray and Groundhog Day because I have to talk about the Suns and just they're so bad defensively. Like last night in the first half against the Lakers, they allowed 52 points in the paint. I mean, you simply can't script how bad they are. And I was doing a podcast for a guy in LA this morning, and he said, you know, they haven't had a playoff game in a long time, and I had to go to the death clock that I've used in the past, and said May 27th, 2010. I know those of you that are like, the Suns are this close and you're picking on them. No, the incompetence is staggering. This isn't aimed towards Igor, because I actually think Igor is a pretty good coach. It's just years and years of nonsense. So last night, the Lakers finished with 70 points in the paint. They scored 116. I mean, come on. DeAndre didn't play. Guys, when you have zero rim protection, 70 of your points are in the paint. You just don't care. And I have a solution to this that I will get to in a minute. The name of Anthony Davis. The ASU game, those guys, man, I swear, Bobby's just got to... And people blame Bobby for not taking the timeout at the end of the game. I was fine with him not taking the timeout because you allow the defense to set up. When it works, he's brilliant. When it doesn't work, oh, he's hanging on to timeouts again. There's no middle ground. But missing late free throws, which they did, jacking up some poor shots, which they did, they should have swept. They should have swept out in the LA schools. And of course, it's Super Bowl week. And those of you that are Patriots fans, you are excited. Those of you that are not, you are just sick and tired of hearing about Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. There's no middle ground. Talking about Bill Belichick and Tom Brady is like talking about LeBron James' decision. It's like talking about Grayson Allen. It's like talking about Christian Laettner. There's just certain people in sports that when you say their name, you go, I don't want to hear that name again. I'm tired of hearing about the decision. It is Waste Management Open Week. Some of the big names are not playing here. We will talk about that. A few other things I've got in the show sheet today. We're brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. And you can do that through life insurance. I had a speaking engagement this morning at St. Vincent de Paul. Went down there and spoke to a lot of people. And these are people that are going through tough, tough, tough times. And many of them said, I never thought I would be in this situation. And you hope that they get out of that situation that they are in. You just don't know. You may think you know. You got it all figured out. I was with somebody the other day. Yeah, I think I'll get around to purchasing some life insurance in March. That'll be convenient. Okay, I guess you know when things are going to not, car's not going to run into you, right? This isn't scary stuff. It's just a fact. Oh, it's fine. I guess you've got it all figured out. You've got it all figured out. Okay, protect what matters most. You can do it with life insurance, annuities, all sorts of different products with the good people at Sagicor. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Eric Sorensen is with us from, why would you go to Dallas in January? What is the rationale? Because the Frogs aren't playing football.
They are not. And yeah. I was actually in Fort Worth.
Why would you? Come on.
I mean,
okay, so you're in
Dallas
Fort
isn't Fort Worth.
You were in Texas.
Jeez, I was.
Correct
I was
me
a,
on everything this morning.
I was in the Metroplex.
Yeah. Why would you go?
Well, because people in Fort Worth don't really like Dallas, and people in Dallas don't really like
things.
Fort Worth.
It's one of those things.
They're two different cities. But okay, anyway, I went.
Answer the question. Why would you go?
I went back for a basketball game. TCU is a basketball school.
Are they good?
So they're pretty good. 15-4.
Are they better than their football team?
It depends on the year.
Yeah.
But it was the big... SEC Big 12 Challenge over the weekend, and the mighty Florida Gators came to Fort Worth.
They're not good.
They're okay. They're
you beat
not.
Them?
They did. They're not Billy Donovan, Florida.
Yeah.
They're more of the grind it out, play really good defense, and hope to win.
Yeah.
Not the high flying Final Four national championship usual.
But TCU won.
TCU did win.
Yeah.
In a real ugly game.
So you flew all the way back there to watch TCU, Florida in a really ugly game.
Oh, so far. It's like 2 hours on a plane.
Did you hang out?
So far. Did I hang out? Of course.
You
I mean, most you... I mean, most of my friends that I'm close to that I went to college with still live there.
Okay.
So it's really like a paid vacation because I don't have to do much. I just have to get on a plane and then someone's there to pick me up and I have a place to stay and I get to eat at all my favorite restaurants and I get spoiled.
What was the deal with you answering an email from me? You're not supposed to answer email. You're on vacation. I was just about ready to, I don't know.
Well, if you send the email.
Don't check the email. Do you guys check email when you're on vacation? I would hope not. You're on vacation.
It was a time sensitive matter.
I don't even remember what it was about, so.
This is about going to NAU next week.
Oh, yeah, we might. We might. I'll talk to you.
I don't know. I just thought, like, hey, it didn't take very long. I'm sure you'd want to put it on
your
radar.
Please decompress. Please get away.
Well, don't send me emails, and maybe I'll decompress.
Would you trade Devin Booker for Anthony Davis?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
that didn't take long, did it?
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Trade pretty much anyone for Anthony Davis.
The thing with Devin Booker, I don't know. Did you see the game last night?
I did not. I was on a plane, but I did see the score.
Yeah.
And I saw that Lance Stephenson, of all players, had a big game. So,
he was
you know,
doing the
when,
Qatar threes,
You
man.
Know when Lance Stephenson has a big game, it's probably a lopsided Suns loss.
Let's see. What did I write last night? While I'm watching him, these guys blow, these guys blow, these guys blow. But I also wrote, no LeBron, no Lonzo, no Kyle Kuzma, no Tyson Chandler. And this is what we get. But I would, Eric, I would move Devin Booker. He had another spat last night with the Lakers. I'm in this space with Devin Booker where, yes, he's a fine player, and he's got a big number. You have to match numbers. If you're going to go get Anthony Davis, you have to find ways to match numbers. The Tyson Chandler contract was one of those that you looked at and said, we want to make sure we make the right move when we decide to trade him. When they traded, what's his name, Trevor Ariza, you had to make sure that you made the right move in order to move him, to trade him. So, if they're going to go get Anthony Davis, I'm on the phone today.
Yeah.
I mean, James Jones knows Rich Paul, the agent. I have to believe. Yeah.
It's all well and good, though, for us, Brad, to want Anthony Davis. The problem is Anthony Davis can sort of dictate where he goes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I doubt Phoenix is anywhere near the top of the list of places to go.
But didn't they
especially say that? Because that team that plays the West has that one guy who kind of said something about this other guy about playing together.
But that guy's old. LeBron's getting older. Everybody said Paul George will not stay in Oklahoma City, right?
Right.
And what happened? He stayed.
He did.
So if you roll the dice, like I think Danny Ainge is probably going to say, I'll take Jason Tatum and send him to New Orleans and I'll get Anthony Davis here. If I'm the Lakers, I would say, yeah, I'll trade Kuzma and I'll trade Lonzo and all the contracts that have to match up. This isn't fantasy ball here. If I'm the Suns, do I have the space? Do I have the space to go after Anthony Davis? Would the Pelicans say, we do not want Anthony Davis in the Western Conference. We want Anthony Davis over in the East. If you did not hear, the agent for Anthony Davis said today, my client is not re-signing in New Orleans. He's got a year and a half left.
Which is a real bummer because our guy Alvin Gentry said that, hey, there's no way we're going to trade him. He's staying here. And then Anthony Davis is like, yeah, I'm not re-signing.
Yeah. So he's...
Bummer.
So he's not going to re-sign, but look, Booker would have to be part of the deal. And in my way of looking at building a franchise, you build it at the top of the point guard, which they don't have, and they haven't had, and they keep trying to tell us they have had or do have, and they don't. You have the number one overall pick in all likelihood. You have the assets in order to do it. Devin Booker's a fine player, but I'm just telling you, Devin Booker's going to do the same thing to Phoenix that Anthony Davis is doing to New Orleans at some point. Yeah, I'm not re-signing. I know he still has years left on his deal, but this is how it goes when you have a franchise that is rudderless. It just is. Oh, you're hating on the Suns. No, guys, if you've seen any progress, anything at all, Christian Kirk in studio after this timeout. Joined now in studio by Christian Kirk. Always good to have Mr. Kirk, Captain Kirk, whatever name you want to use, because he's been in here through the years from runt to big shot. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Cannot see your injury. How's it coming?
It's coming great. About a month, a little bit under a month until I'm, fully 100%. So just kind of taking it day by day and just being patient, which is tough for me because, I'm always go, and
as soon as he's done, he's out. He's just on the run.
Yeah, always on the run. So, just taking it patient and, just trying to be 100% when OTAs come around.
What were your emotions looking back on it when it happened? Did you know? And are you handling this as well as you can, do you think?
Yeah, obviously the play that had happened, I knew immediately that it was broken because when I got up, I could feel the bones in my foot just kind of moving around. And so I tried to play. I played about three more plays, and then, the two-minute warning came, and, we huddled up. And I was telling, I think it was Trent Sherfield, I was like, I think my foot is broken. And he's like, push through it. Don't think like that. Don't think like that. And I'm like, no, my foot is broken. Yeah, and so I ran out there for the last play and tried to run off the ball and kind of do it. So just immediately walked into the sideline. They took me in for x-rays, and sure enough, it was broken, clean through. And, when they told me my season was over, a lot of emotions just because I never missed a game in my career.
Pee-wee,
nothing. And so, this was something new for me. I mean, I had had surgeries before, but this was all in the off season. And so a lot of emotions, for the first couple of weeks, it was tough on me, not being able to go out to practice and, be with my teammates and finish out the season. Watching the first game, not being out there, was tough. But, I just look at it as an opportunity. Somebody sent me a quote that said, every obstacle equals a new opportunity. And so that's kind of the quote I've kind of been, living off of this whole entire rehab process and just looking at this as a new opportunity to just, be a better me.
What didn't you know going into your first year of the NFL that you can sit here and say, Brad, here's what I learned about the deal?
I would like to say that I had a great supporting staff and, a lot of people around me and, guys who had been there before and, even right when I stepped in, just my teammates being able to help prepare me. But I guess just the preparation week in and week out, regardless if you're winning and losing, to go in and they said it in college, every practice is going to be like a game, but it's not like the NFL. I mean, every single practice felt like a game to me. I mean, I was walking off the field exhausted, but the more I started treating it like a game, every time I stepped on the field and really was trying to perfect my craft and the things that I maybe wasn't doing so well and just attacking that during practice, each week I was getting better and better and better, and I could just see that in my game. And so it just kind of helped push me and motivate. Yeah, it was hard. I mean, there was days where it's like, man, I really, my body's tough, I'm sore, it's week 12 and I'm hurting, but, I still have to come out here and get better because I knew, we still had four or five more games left.
Yeah. What are you going to change then? I mean, I know you're rehabbing the foot, but what difference is he going to do here in the off season? Like Larry goes and just disappears.
Yeah.
He hits holes in one, but he disappears. Right? But what are some things you may do this off season that, okay, I know it's going to come, and I know it's going to be a 20-plus week grind on my body.
Right.
Anything?
I'd like to think that, the way that I attack my off-season training, is very well organized and pertain to me and how my body reacts, over the years. You kind of have to learn your body. You got to know, what it reacts to, what it doesn't react to. And sometimes when you switch it up, your body might not react to it. You're like, okay, I'm just going to go back to what works. You might as well stick to what works. If it's not broke, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. But I think this off season, a big thing is going to be spending a lot of time with Josh on the field, throwing the ball and getting a lot of routes and timing in. And because I feel like that's going to be a big, kind of integral part, because obviously we this time last year had no idea we'd be playing with one another. And up until week four, we had no idea we'd be playing with each other. And then he comes into that starting role, and now you have to start really getting the timing down and in practice, but you still have a game on Sunday. So now we can kind of get all those little kinks out of the way, this off season, and really kind of hone in on our timing and what works for us.
It's funny because I'll see guys and talk with guys that in baseball, they'll go work on something major leaguers. Basketball guys want to improve their mid-range jump shot or their footwork in the offseason. NFL guys, completely different deal. It is a, and in your position in particular, it's a timing 100%. Deal. And so that's not something that you can practice on your own. You've got to have Josh there with you. Will you do it here? Will you go to L.A.? Will you? Where will you guys work?
We'll be in L.A. because Josh is back at school right now, you know, finishing up some classes. So I'll be out there in L.A., probably using UCLA's facilities, just, you know, getting on the field. And, you know, like you said, it would be easier for me to say, oh, I just want to improve my releases, or I want to work on one-handed catches or whatnot. But if I have good releases, Josh still has to throw the ball, and I still got to make the catch. So I 100% agree when it comes to, you know, this sport, and especially my position, it's all about timing.
If you were to look back on Josh and the beating that he took, I really admire how he hung in there this season. And I've seen guys, Christian, that have taken the beating, and by the end of the season, they're just done. Mm-hmm. I didn't see that in him. You see him, obviously, in a different environment. I really admired how he grew and hung in there this season.
So did I. And I say it to everybody. I mean, people don't realize how tough he is, because he was taking some shots. And
when you're
out there and you see it firsthand, I mean, he was taking shots. And, you know, the media can say whatever they want. And, you know, at the end of the day, he is who he is. And, you know, I just – the thing that, you know, I give, you know, so much props to him about, it impresses me, is, you know, he'll even say, I was just being soft that play. Like, if you're a quarterback –
So in the huddle.
Yeah, or you asking me
– On the sideline.
Yeah, are you all right? Yeah, I was just being soft. I'm good. Let's go. That's what you want to hear from your quarterback.
Yeah. So. It's like the clip of Edelman walking by Tom Brady last week and yelling at him, you're 40! Yeah. You're 40!
Yeah.
You know, trying to make him – motivate him. You know, right. That's really cool. Did you say anything back to Josh like that?
No. I mean, it just kind of – you kind of just feed off of each other's energy. Yeah. And, you know, we like to joke around and keep it light out there, you know, especially, you know, two young guys. You know, we like to keep it light, not try to get, you know, too uptight and tense, and try to play loose and, you know, just go out there and have fun. And, you know, you see it when we're on, you know, the offense is clicking and, you know, we're out there making plays. I mean, it's just fun.
Cliff Kingsbury comes in. Have you visited with him yet?
Yes, I ran into him 2 weeks ago. You know, he was walking around the building, and, you know, we ran into one another, and it was good to see him for, you know, the first time of him, you know, being here, and just talked about, you know, what we're going to do, you know, offensively, and, you know, throw it around a little bit, and just couldn't express, you know, how much, you know, we're ready to get to work.
Now, help me on this one. The Aggies versus the Red Raiders, that never happened.
No.
Unfortunate. Yeah. I would have liked to have heard. I'd like to have heard some of that.
Yeah.
This offense, it can be an Arena Football League number type offense. Can be. What do you expect it to be?
Yeah, I was. You know, I've been getting asked this a lot recently, and, you know, I think a lot of people are under the pressure. You know, air raid. You know, five wide. We're going to be in shotgun the whole entire time, and I don't think it's going to be any of that. You know, I know that, you know, he's such a creative mind, and, you know, in this league, you know, you offensively, you can't be successful unless you don't have a solid running game.
Right.
And so, you know, you have to line up with two tight ends and be able to run it between the tackles. And we have an all-pro running back there that, you know, needs his touches as well, because he can affect the game as much as anybody. So I think you're going to see a lot of diversity and just being able to put our skill players in the right positions to make those plays. And, you know, I feel like this offense is going to be all about mismatches, you know, getting these mismatches against the defense and, you know, taking advantage of those opportunities.
Are you surprised with the Super Bowl matchup? Can't be, can you?
No.
And what do you see in that game and how it plays out from your view? You want to be media guy someday, so, you know, have at it.
Here. Yeah, I mean,
put the analyst hat on. Tony Romo.
I saw an article that said ticket sales are plummeting because the Patriots and the Rams are in the Super Bowl, which I don't get at all, because you look at a team of the Rams 4 years ago, I mean, they were one of the worst teams in the league.
Right.
They moved to L.A., have a decent year, you know, with Jared Goff, not the best year, and then all of a sudden they're in the Super Bowl. And so you got to root for, you know, a team like that, and, you know, with all the talent that they have. But you got to also think, too, this is their first time in the Super Bowl. Who knows what emotions are going to be running through, you know, those guys. And you got Tom Brady and the Patriots, where half of that team has been to the Super Bowl already. And so I kind of like to relate it, you know, my days at Saguaro. I mean, you know, when you're playing in a state championship every year, you know, you know how to approach it. You know how this whole entire process works. You know, when you get down, you know.
You were never down. Get out of here. Were you guys ever, do you ever trail at SAG? Here we go. Here it comes.
Okay, it was close.
It was close. It might have been,
you know, actually, against Williamsfield, it was tied. Before I returned that kickoff, before halftime, it was a tie game because I had fumbled and they returned it. And that's where I remember being.
So one high school game.
Yeah. But still. But still, at least I can relate still, a little bit.
Yeah, a little
bit. I can relate to Tom Brady being down 28-3.
The tiny one deal.
I think it's going to be a good one, though. It should be a good one.
Talk with Christian Kirk here in studio. When you look at the, again, media, put your analyst hat in the future, and I know you can't go too far down the road on this one, but team's got the number one pick. Number one overall pick. Mm-hmm. And you look at the team, how do you go about building a franchise from a player's point of view? It's got to be interesting to see what they're going to do.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. I would like to educate myself a little bit more and go out there. And, you know, I know the media is, you know, you can't believe everything you say, but I'd like to go look at the boards a little bit more. And obviously I know Nick Bosa is number one and, you know, that's a lot of talk. He's a must pick. You can't skip up on him, which I do think would be good for us because you look at all the elite, you know, teams in the NFL have two elite pass rushers, you know, on their defense. And so
you've seen Kyler Murray.
I have. It's a great friend
Pretty
of mine.
Pretty close.
It's a great friend of mine.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
What do you think?
We drafted our franchise quarterback.
And I'm not asking about the Cardinals. I'm not trying to stir it here.
Yeah.
Right? I'm just saying Kyler Murray has a number one overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
Talent-wise,
right?
Do you see that?
100%. I mean, anytime you're a Heisman Trophy winner and you do the things that he's able to do on the field, I mean, it's hard for you to say not to.
Right.
I've seen him do things that are just insane. I mean, the type of athletic ability that he's been blessed with and what he's able to do on the field. He's a great leader, a great person to have on your team. Let alone you see what he does in baseball. I mean, you
is
know,
he better baseball than football? What do you think? You've seen him in both.
I mean, he's elite at both. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, on the football field though, it's special what he does.
Okay, what can you do he can't on the football field?
What can I do?
Yeah, so he's a good friend of yours.
I mean,
I am kind of stirring it now because
yeah, you might be.
I might run into him and say, you know, Christian Kirk said you can't do this. He'll say, "Come on, man, that's not right."
I don't think he can catch like me. Definitely.
He's not as fast.
He doesn't have the rush. No, I'm faster than him. Tell him that. When you ask him if because he's not faster than me.
You're sure of this?
I'm 100% sure.
Okay, so if I show him this clip, he's going to be like, "Come on,
he's not faster than me."
Is he really slow? Turtle?
No, he's fast. He's quick. He's quicker than he is fast.
He's quick than fast.
Yeah.
Be quick, don't hurry. I understand what you're saying.
Exactly.
Larry Fitzgerald comes back. And was this a surprise to you?
No. I mean, I thought the decision was going to come a little later just because, you know, we're talking to him. You know, obviously he's out traveling and, you know.
Hitting holes in one with Barack Obama. Holes in,
exactly. You know, just doing things that your everyday person does. But I actually didn't find out until I walked in the facility yesterday and saw it on ESPN and kind of had a squint a little bit. And I was like, oh, okay. And so that's how I found out the news. But it doesn't surprise me at all. Just knowing the type of competitor that he is, the guy he is. And, you know, I told him we have a lot of unfinished business we have to do. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to have another year of work, you know, with him.
Are there things that you can't talk about here with me that Larry Fitzgerald has taught you and poured into you that you just can't explain? Or am I overstating it? Brad, he's a great Hall of Fame wide receiver. That's about it. Sometimes guys read too much into stuff when they're around elite level athletes. I'm just wondering if he pulled you aside at any point or time or said things to you that were, wow, that's pretty cool.
I mean, countless, but it's more of those, you know, kind of it's just in the moment, and it's hard to recreate the moment.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And,
sure.
And so
during
many,
a game or off the
field? Yeah, and it's off the field. I mean, we're always going to movies and eat, you know, going out to eat and stuff like that. Just little things. I mean, there's always those little things that, you know, he says, and, you know, especially when you're around a person like that, you know, mm-hmm. you just kind of have to pick up on all of it. But it's hard because I get that question so much, and so many people want to know, like, what is it like? Like, what is it like to be
able
to
sit?
Yeah,
that's not what I'm going with this one.
And it's just, it's hard for me to sit and just, you know, be able to ramble off everything that, you know, he's either said or whatnot. But everything that people say and, you know, if somebody didn't know and have never been around him, I mean, it's all true.
Okay, so everything that you saw in him growing up, you probably started watching him when you were 8, mm-hmm. right?
Probably younger, like 5 or 6.
5 or 6, yeah. Right? And did you ever have an 11 jersey growing up? Were you that kid? Mm-hmm. Lots of kids?
Yeah.
So now you're there, and I know this is media, like, is it amazing and all that stuff. That's not where I'm going again with this. It's just... Mm-hmm. To be in a space where he is pouring into you had to be something the first time he did it where you're like, this can't be happening. Oh, really?
Yeah, 100%. It feels surreal. And, you know, just all, like you said, just all the years of, you know, looking up to him and, you know, being able to talk to him here and there, but, you know, would have never thought in a million years, you know, I'd be in the same meeting room, be on the same field, be his teammate, line up next to him, and mm-hmm. just be able to learn from that aspect.
Your shirt caught my eye. What is this? Is this something, just a shirt?
Or yeah, just a shirt.
There's nothing that you're doing?
No, just a shirt.
All right.
I like cars, so.
I know.
I love cars.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Are you going to race?
Yeah.
This is bad stuff for the Cardinals and the NFL and the agent.
I'm trying to see how I can be politically correct.
Got it. Yeah. When you're done, you're going to race.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. 100%?
100%.
NASCAR?
No.
F1?
I would love to. I mean, those F1 racers have been racing as long as I've been playing football.
Mm-hmm.
But my grandfather does a lot of autocross and Indy racing and stuff like that.
So IRL?
Yes. And yeah. So, you know, I've been out to the track a couple of times, and I think that's definitely where my off time is going to be going when I retire.
When he's done playing the game.
When I'm done.
When I'm done, yeah. Finished, not like this off season. Right. Is there a driver that you look at that you really admire or that you've gotten to know?
Not that I haven't gotten to know, but I'd love to meet him, is Lewis Hamilton. I would love to meet him. He's a Mercedes driver. Mm-hmm. He does Formula One, and follow him on social media and whatnot, and that's definitely a person that I'd love to meet.
Anything else you want to add that you're doing here in this offseason? I know you're working on your foot, but mm-hmm. I don't walk up to your locker and pull you aside all the time. So yeah. I'm just getting caught up. Anything else going on that we should be aware of?
You know, not much. You know, I got a couple of things, you know, that I'm working on, you know, some community stuff.
Like what?
Children's Cancer Network. I think February 10th.
Push it.
Yeah, I'm going to push it.
Sell it
they
right
have
now.
They have a children's cancer fashion show. That's love clothes, cool. Love fashion. So I'm going to help the kids pick out their outfits and going to be there for them to have their own fashion show and, you know, donate some stuff. So that'll be fun. I'm really looking forward to that.
And you did ask as he walked in, Christian said, so what's the story? He asked Devin about this. What's the story with the new playoff system? So mm-hmm. Saguaro could be playing. Or will be playing in the Elite Eight, sounds like.
They will be.
You're interested in that? You still get over to the school much?
Yeah. And actually spent, you know, quite a bit of time over there, especially during their playoff run. Went to the semifinal game. Wasn't able to make it to the state championship game, but still go over there. Still come out to, you know, they do, you know, extra work on the weekends and what, you know, whatnot when it's the off season. So, obviously, I'm hurt now, but. You know, when I get healthy, make sure I get out there and get some work in with them.
Part of the thing that Christian has talked about through the years when he comes in here, I keep asking him, do you want to do this? I know you're playing right now. It's kind of like race car driving. But if you ever just want to come in the off season and sit in this chair and have somebody there, the invitation's open.
Do I get to interview you first?
You can. You can turn me around. I'm fine with that. All right. You can do that. Just don't screw up. And it's, you know, that's my – and I don't care who it is.
Right.
I really don't. If you want to, maybe we get, that's another conversation for another time. I appreciate you coming in studio.
Thank you.
It's good seeing
you. Yes, sir.
It's Christian Kirk in studio. Good stuff there. Sports360AZ.com. Christian Kirk with us here in studio. Appreciate his time here on the show. Back after this timeout. So one of the stories over the weekend that caught my eye was Arizona State football offering an 8th grader. They offered an 8th grader who's a wide receiver, defensive back, out of Southern California. I don't have the video of the kid today because I wanted to marinate on this a little bit and debated not even talking about it on the show. But I think because of what has happened here at Arizona State since Herm Edwards came on board, which is now in its 13th month, Arizona State cannot come on this show. They cannot go anywhere and publicly talk about why they would offer a football scholarship to a 14-year-old. Why they would do it to an eighth grader. It's a great opportunity for this eighth grader. He put it out on his social media. This eighth grader already had his own huddle tape. Of course he did. And he may blow up into be something special. What's interesting is when I put this story out on the website on Saturday, and I had to think about it for a bit. It's like, okay, we don't like doing stories on kids that young, but occasionally things come along. Marvin Bagley was one of the exceptions when we started this platform. There's guys that come along here locally that, as much as I don't like chasing around eighth graders or talking to their parents about giving them media attention, this case, in Bagley's case, was different. There's a lot of moving parts on that story. First time that Arizona State has offered an eighth grader that I am aware of. I'm sure Mark Brand would correct me on this over at ASU if I were wrong. What's the positive of this? What would it be that ASU and Rob Likens on the offensive side of the football, why? Because he's the one that made the offer, according to this kid. And nobody at ASU called me and said, yeah, this was fake. This didn't happen. The kid put it out on social. And two reactions happened. There was the reaction of, this was most of the reaction, silly, stupid, why? Then there's the other side of great hip twitch, outstanding ability to get to the football. Yeah, there are those guys that are out there too. And it's fine. That's what fandom's all about. If you have that much time on a Saturday to sit and watch a huddle tape of an eighth grader who is 4 years away, 5 years away from being at Arizona State, knock yourself out. I think since Herm came on board and Michael Crow talked about the direction of the athletic department, and there's that whole weird email the day before Herm was hired about the new ASU and all this stuff, that offering an eighth grader, bringing on board Sean Aguano to say, we are not letting guys out of the state. Remember, for years and years, ASU would be like, well, guys just want to leave the state. And then you'd get the pressure from the media and the boosters. And then you'd have Todd Graham saying, we're going to close the borders. And that didn't happen. And then good players still continue to leave. Byron Murphy would still walk out of here. And Austin Jackson would still walk out of here. And Spencer Rattler would still walk out of here. And on and on and on and on and on. So then all of a sudden it's, and then Al Luganville said at letter of intent day in December, we are not going to take people's seconds and thirds. And I actually like that. I actually did like that because I know that there are some certain programs. I'm not going to call out these programs. There are certain coaches that don't want their kids to go to U of A or ASU. They want them to leave and go out of state. Or there are certain coaches and certain programs that just have it in for said college, whether it's ASU or U of A, because they didn't take their second or third or fourth guy. I could give you the rumor mill. I'm not going to do that on certain coaches. Not happening. Do you think ASU, because nobody said a word, likes the fact that offering an eighth grader is out there now? We're kind of cool, kind of different. It's the way we operate. We see you. You want to come over here? It's great. They open spring ball. In fact, Eric and Jordan on Thursday are going to be at ASU spring football for their media day. This stuff is coming fast. Like, I don't know. I was talking to Jordan Simone about this the other night. We did our TV show over Casino, Arizona. And he's of the opinion there's going to be some juniors that are going to be seniors and some sophomores that are going to be juniors that still haven't healed up yet from last season. Because the bowl game was December 15th. We're like 45 days later and they're back at it. Well, on ASU's end, if a guy gets hurt now in spring football, he's going to have enough time to heal up and be ready to go for next season. I think that's the way they could look at it. Point of it is, with an eighth grader being offered a scholarship, how often is that going to happen? I have an eighth grader. It's crazy to think that a 14-year-old, hey, you're good enough, you can, we're going to offer you and knock yourself out and go. I can't believe that. But that's where we are in recruiting. And some of you love it. Some of you were just appalled by it. And I thought it was really interesting. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat.